This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
9:10 on this St. Joseph's Day. Joe Cardosi, I guess I should tell you happy St. Joseph's Day. Cardosi is an Italian name. And will you be celebrating, going to any St. Joseph's altars or anything like that? All right. Well, give me a lucky bean if you do go anywhere, please. All right, do that. We're going to talk about the history of Italy today, as we did on Monday, the history of Ireland and the history of the Italians in America, and what led them to come here, and what happened after they did get here. I've had the privilege of going to both countries, and completely different. Ireland seems pretty well, for the most part, one culture other than the Irish Protestant thing. Italy seems like a bunch of different cultures to me, depending on what area you go to. With that, we welcome in our guest, Fred, forgive me, sir, Gardafi, how you say it? Professor, you there? Fred, you got me on mute?
No, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, hello? Sir, we can hear you fine. How do you pronounce your last name, sir?
Okay. It's Gardafi. It's actually... Yeah, it's actually part, it's Basque, French Basque, Gardafi.
Fred Gardafi, okay.
Right, but I'm 3/4 Italian, 1/4 French Basque.
We all want to be Italian on St. Joseph's Day. We all want to be Irish on St. Patrick's Day. Tell me about the country of Italy and a little bit of the history, and then we'll talk about the Italians in America. Because, again, I've been to both countries, and you heard me say, Ireland seems like a... limited cultural difference, but Italy seems like a couple of different countries all in one.
Right. Italy is if you look at it, it's got a very strategic location between the east and the west, and so it's always been a land that has been occupied by many other groups coming through. The Arabs, the Normans came in from the north, the Africans from the south, and it's been a, you know, it's really one of those true multicultural countries back in the time when people thought, well, we're all Italian, you know, and today I think it's really coming forth even more so to see all this diversity that's inside of Italy. But there was a time period in which Italy was all these little kingdoms, these little lands, and primarily those lands were given out by the Pope in return for protection and tribute, you know, to him. You had the French up north and the Normans, and you had the English coming in the south, and you had, you know, the Spanish coming down. And, you know, at one point, the Spanish ruled the Naples and the Sicily area, in a area they used to call the Kingdom of Two Sicilies. And so in the 1860s, Garibaldi... was recruited to chase out all of the foreign powers, and he poised himself almost to throw out the Pope. They were going to get rid of the Pope, but then they, in a last-minute compromise, they suggested that if they would have thrown out the Pope, then they would have had to fight all the other nations, including Ireland and England, which were pretty Catholic at the time. And so they decided to give Rome its own, give the Vatican, Catholics, its the Vatican as an independent nation, and so you still have that today. But Italy has always been these independent kingdoms that have kind of come together. And then when it did come together in 1861, the people who lived in southern Italy weren't too happy with the results. And so it began one of the largest mass emigration experiences in Western civilization.
In the 1860s, and that was about the same time as the Irish, or not really?
The Irish were a little bit before. Irish were a little bit before, because what happened in Ireland was the English forced Ireland to change their agricultural habits, and they forced them to plant potatoes. And anybody who lives in Idaho knows that you need dry weather to have potatoes. And so that the Irish would have a potato famine at some point should have been as no surprise. But the Irish were very strong supporters of the Pope, and the Italians were very strong critics of the Pope. And so when they meet in the United States, you get this instant friction. First of all, because the Irish, because they were occupied by the English, learned English language, so they knew some English when they came to the United States, and they were more easily assimilated into the United States, whereas the Italians were much more of a slower assimilation in terms of language, in terms of trusting public institutions and so on, whereas the Irish, they were at the center of a lot of those institutions.
Professor, let me jump in for a second, take a step back. I didn't really introduce you. This is Fred Gardafay, Distinguished Professor of English and Italian-American Studies at Queens College. CUNY, and John D. Calandre, Italian-American Institute, also the author of several books. I like to get the audience involved, and again, I'm getting some text here. So when you said at 504-260-1870, I'll remind the audience, that's the Oakmanard Jeweler Talk and Text line. When you said the Irish liked the Pope and the Italians didn't, is that because part of Italy or Rome was carved out for Vatican City? Take me through that.
Right. Well, what it was the English and the Irish were very Catholic early on, and it wasn't until Henry VIII that they began to change it to the Protestants, the Church of England, and so on. So what you have happening is there's still this incredible support for Rome as the center of Catholicism by the Irish, whereas the Italians, who have been occupied by the Catholic Church for millennia, know that, of the corruption that's there, and they've learned not to trust it. And so there's this kind of anti-clerical movement in Italy and this pro-clerical movement in Ireland. And when the Irish come to the United States, they're looking for ways to assimilate, to come into power. And so they take jobs at all the institutions. They take jobs in the police. They take jobs in the education. And they're the founders of the Catholic Church in the United States. Remember, the United States is pretty much a Protestant country until the Irish begin to come.
So real quick, and somebody else.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy!
Texted this in. Jesus never went to Italy. Why is the Catholic Church based in Italy? I'll just throw that out there. You can answer them.
All right, I can answer that. It's because when Jesus was persecuted in in the Middle East, his followers didn't think that was a great place to hang out. So they started heading out away, and they ended up coming to Rome because Rome was this kind of free city, and it was a good place to run away and hide if you're a Jesus supporter. You don't want to get persecuted in Jerusalem and all that. And so they come there, and they're the minority, and they end up becoming the majority of the country. A lot of that has to do with the way that they were able to convert the people they call the pagans, but the word paganus in Latin means peasants. And so these were the peasants who lived outside the city. They were considered the pagans because they still worshiped the land and they still had rituals according to the land and so on. So what you have happening is that the Christians end up taking over religion in the Italian area, and up until the 1860s, they're pretty much in power.
But at some point, Italians become intensely Catholic, right?
Yeah, right. No, this was like right after after the persecution of the Christians, because what happened was a lot of major leaders began having these conversion experiences, Constantine and so on. So they gave a lot of credibility to the Catholic Church, and you have this incredible Catholic empire that grows. And as it grows, the Pope gets more powerful, and he starts giving land to the people who support him. And eventually, there's a rebellion against that, and that's how Italy became a geopolitical nation in the 1860s. And really, Italy did not become a republic until after World War II. It was a monarchy prior to that. From 1860s until 1940s, it was a monarchy.
So let's talk about the Italians. They come to America 1860s. Their primary competitor is the Irish, or how do the Italians find their way?
You have to understand why in the 1860s are the Italians recruited to come to the United States. Two things are happening. One is the emancipation of the slaves, and so somebody needs to take their places on the plantations, and the Italians are very rural people, so they're recruited to take over the jobs in the plantations. That's why you have so many Italians in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And also you have the industrialization that's going on, especially after the Civil War, up in the North. And factories need bodies. They need numbers. They don't need smart people. They just need people to be able to do the piecework that they do. And so what you have happening is this great need for unskilled labor, and the Italians are they're not doing very well in Italy. They're doing things like they're taxing donkeys, which is what poor people need, and they're not taxing the cows, which is what rich people have. So it's kind of this battle of the rich versus the poor in Italy, and the poor are leaving. I mean, in a lot of other countries, they had revolutions. In Italy, they didn't have a revolution. Their revolution was everybody left. And they went to South America, they went to Canada, they went to the United States. So they come, and yes, their main competition is the Irish in terms of city life. And especially in places like New Orleans, they become very friendly with blacks. A lot of the white power people didn't like that. And there's many, many accounts of black Italian friendships that ended up both blacks and Italians being persecuted. And 100 years ago, you had those famous lynchings in New Orleans, which didn't have anything. Well, we could say it had something to do with race, but a lot of it had to do with just the political situation that the Italians found themselves in terms of being businessmen trying to make a living in a place where, at that time, the power people were not Italians.
Unfortunately, Italian Americans can be lumped together, and people can think of them negatively with all the mob movies, this, that, the other thing. Right. Italian Americans statistically no more prone to crime than any other immigrant, are they?
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. I think it's like 0.07% of Italian Americans have been somehow connected to organized crime. You know, a lot of that has to do with the media and the way the media paid attention to Italians coming in. You know, Italians for a while replaced blacks in terms of the white person's fear of cultural contamination. And, you know, I mean, I wrote an essay called "We Weren't Always White." Mm-hmm. You know, the Italians were able to become white because they stopped speaking the language and, you know, their skin wasn't as dark as Italian. Although on my grandfather's passport, it says, not on his passport, on his entry into the United States, it marks him as dark complexion. Mm. That they took the time to make that distinction, I think, is very important in terms of the history of Italians and their relation to racial situations in the United States. Most recently, the Italian American One Voice anti-defamation group was protesting just a couple of weeks ago, protesting Saturday Night Live for mentioning the fact that, you know, for saying Italians aren't white. Mm. So the Italians are caught in this in-between situation, and you know, writers have talked about them as being in-between people. Mm. You know, I talk of them as being chameleons. I can get along in a black community, but I could also get along in a white community, and I look more white when I'm around blacks, and I look more black when I'm around whites.
Hmm. I never even thought of it in a racial context before. I never had. Tell me what how the Italians fared as opposed to the Irish and other immigrant people that immigrated to the United States, and how the Italians found their way to success in America.
All right. What happened was, a lot of this has to do with language. A lot of Italians immediately changed their name. If their name was Bianco, they changed it to White. But it didn't do too much to having an American or an Anglican name if you spoke with an Italian accent. So it took a while. So the first thing to go was the abandonment of the language. The Italians were very reluctant to go to school. Their way of going ahead in life was to work, to get jobs. Family members got other family members' jobs, go work for Uncle Joey's construction crew. Uncle Joey eventually takes over the construction company, you know, and it goes on and on. So the Italians, they made their power and their way into, you know, being assimilated Americans through labor, through hard work, not through education. It wasn't until the 1960s that Italians became average in terms of education.
Wow!
But before the 60s, they were above average in terms of income. And so you have this, you know, so they made it on the shoulders of money, not on the shoulders of education.
Skilled trades?
Not well, some skilled trades, sure. There were a lot of seamstresses and a lot of tailors and a lot of,
Rick Masons.
You know, Mason, yeah. But you know, in terms of, you know, the ability to save money, to live on very little, to make the most out of little, to, you know, turn a bowl of pasta into something that could feed six people instead of one. You know, my mother would always, on Fridays, if somebody came over to the house, she'd always throw another cup of water in the soup pot and say, you know, we got room for everybody. You know, we could feed. So it actually cost nothing. When I remember, I used to take my grandmother hated restaurants. She hated restaurants because the food was no good, she said, and why should you pay for the things that you can make very cheaply? But she would freak out when she would see dandelion greens for $7 a plate, when we would pick the dandelion greens free in the forest preserves, and she'd cook them up and eat them. So by being very, very hard workers and being very frugal, and really not joining in protests acts against discrimination of Italians and so on. I mean, those things didn't happen until Italians became middle class. And you can even see this reflected in TV shows like The Sopranos, where it's the middle class Italians who get upset about the way they are presented as gangsters. You know, the working class Italian Americans don't get upset because they know that's not them.
Professor, before we let you go, if somebody wanted to celebrate St. Joseph's Day in a legitimate Italian style, an authentic Italian style, what would you suggest they do?
Well, first of all, there's no meats today. It's Lent, and so when they make their pasta, the Italians, they call it St. Joseph's Day pasta. They make it with breadcrumbs and cheese and pasta. The Italians. You have to understand this. St. Joseph's Day in Italy is Father's Day because St. Joseph was the father of Jesus. So it's really Father's Day in Italy. We have Father's Day in June here. And the Italians would set out tables of food for people who walked past their house. And that has morphed into, and there's this great tradition in New Orleans. You'll see them. Look for Google St. Joseph's Tables.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's particularly a Sicilian celebration where they cook food and they ask you for a donation. And these St. Joseph tables are out of this world. The food is fantastic.
Friend of mine, Teddy Tassan from St. Julian A. Martin, used to have one at the end of Lauderdale, my stream. We enjoy it every year. Thank you, Professor. Very interesting.
Right.
Happy St. Joseph's Day to you.
This was great.
We'll
Take
talk
care.
To you again soon. Okay, you bet. Dr. Fred Gardafi. Distinguished professor of English, Italian-American Studies at Queens College, John D. Colander, Italian-American Institute, also the author of several books. We'll take a break. We come back. We're going to talk about the New Orleans aspect of this and the Italians and the Sicilians and some of the celebrations planned with Peter Gilberti, president of the Italian-American St. Joseph Society. I love them both. St. Patrick's Day, St. Joseph's Day, a great two-day, a three-day span with a day of rest in between. Tommy Tucker back in a flash, WWL.